today, the Archbishop's Catholic Appeal. There'll be a second collection at the end of Mass. You have pamphlets and brochures in your pews. This is the biggest fundraiser in the Archdiocese of Denver. It's an annual thing to help the diocese keep going. As Catholics, as Christians, we need to be intentional about where we give our money. A tithe is typically what we strive for. Today is not about that per se. We always preach about money once a year in October, but just the encouragement. There's different ways to divide up a tithe. And what Archbishop recommends, what I would agree with him on this, is that 5% of your tithe should go to your home parish. 2% he asks to go to Archbishop Catholic Appeal, the ACA, today. And then 3% maybe to local charities of your choice. The 2% that goes to the ACA supports great causes. You heard some of them. Maybe one plug is Deacon Michael here. He does all the prison and jail ministry in our archdiocese. He helps coordinate that, gets priests to come hear confessions, mass. He himself goes to jail sometimes to visit the people. They usually let him out, not always, right? But maybe you don't know that, right? It goes to great causes that help support, evangelize, especially those who are in need. So encouragements to be generous to the Archbishop's Catholic Appeal. 2% is what I personally do. Again, there'll be a second collection at the end of Mass. I love being a priest. I love it. And yesterday was one of the days where, like, it's just heavy sacrament, so 2 hours of confession in the morning, a baptism after that, a wedding in the afternoon, and then Saturday night Mass. And I was totally unprepared for my homily last night, so I told the crowd last night, I said, if you want a bad homily, come to Saturday night Mass, right? But if you want a mediocre homily, come to Sunday morning Mass, right? I have one kind of main point for today, and that point is peace. The main message of today is peace. I always find it interesting that right after Jesus resurrects, the first message he gives to the apostles, the first message that he gives today in Luke 24 in a small village called Emmaus, the first thing that he says when he appears in his flesh is, peace be with you. Shalom Aleichem. John chapter 20, on Easter Sunday night, the apostles are hiding in the upper room for fear of the Jews. And Jesus breaks into that room behind locked doors and says, peace be with you. The first message of the resurrection. Yes, the resurrection brings hope, brings joy, but God brings peace. Today, Luke 24, it's Easter Sunday, but it's about a couple, possibly a married couple, who have just left Jerusalem, the road to Emmaus. They were in Jerusalem, they saw these horrible events, and then Sunday morning happens, and Jesus is not in the tomb. And it says they begin to doubt. It says they had hoped. They used to hope. They used to hope that God, the Messiah, would come and solve all their problems, but now they're discouraged because they don't find Jesus in the tomb. Has someone taken away his body? Where is he gone? Has he actually resurrected? I've never seen anyone rise from the dead. And then Jesus comes to them in the breaking of the bread. And then later that afternoon, later that evening, Easter Sunday night in a small village away from Jerusalem, Emmaus, they recounted that story. As they were saying this, Jesus himself stood among them and said to them, peace be with you. Shalom. Hebrew is a very dynamic language. It's not just a word that's said, it calls something out of us. So one of the classic phrases of this is the word Shema, hear, listen, in Hebrew. Shema Israel, hear, O Israel, the Lord is your God, the Lord alone. To listen in Hebrew doesn't mean just to hear it. It also calls something out of us to be obedient to it. Shalom is the same way. It's not just peace, an absence of something. Peace certainly has that aspect. It's an absence of chaos, an absence of war. But when Jesus comes and says, peace be with you, he's giving something to us. He's giving something to the apostles. He's restoring something within them. It's a dynamic language. It gives something to the apostles. St. Augustine in his great work, City of God. Maybe you've read it. This is going to be a very, very paraphrased, dumbed-down version of City of God. But St. Augustine will talk about two different cities, the city of man versus the city of God. In the city of man is that city that sometimes we find ourselves in this world, where we're striving for the things of this world, more power, more pleasure, more wealth. And there's disorders there, concupiscence, original sin. But then there's a different city, the city of God, which is all about the divine order of things. And there's a peace in that city. St. Augustine says peace in that city, peace is defined by a tranquility of order, a calmness, a quietness, that when there's disorder in this world, in the city of God, there's harmony, there's order, there's tranquility. Peace is not just a removal of something, an absence of something. It brings a harmony back to our soul. When I was in my first year of seminary here in Denver, we do something called the spirituality year. The spirituality year is a year for the heart, not the head. So there's actually no homework, which is absolutely amazing, right? No grades. You still have classes. You still do some studying. But it's like the best of both worlds, right? You get to study without the grade of it, right? A year for the heart, not the head. In the month of January in that year, we do a poverty immersion. We go and serve the poor in some way. I was assigned to go to Tulsa, Oklahoma to serve a hospital there as a hospital chaplain. And it was, what was unique about that assignment is that it wasn't to the material poor, it was to those who are physically poor, poor in health in some way. And so when I was 20 years old, I got on a Greyhound bus, bussed out to Tulsa, Oklahoma. Still have yet to be on a Greyhound bus since then, right? And when I got there, I was terrified. What am I supposed to say? How am I supposed to be a hospital chaplain? I remember following the other chaplains around, and they were kind of, we were shadowing them, they were teaching us. And just a couple days in, I started to get the hang of it, or so I thought. And then this other chaplain, she asked, okay, why don't you take it from here? You'll take this next one. And so we're going room to room. We introduce ourselves. You know, my name's Sean. I'm a hospital chaplain here, one of the chaplains. How are you doing today? Can I pray with you? And that time we were on the neuro ICU floor, which I knew nothing about. I had no experiences of being in a hospital. I had only visited a hospital maybe once or twice for a relative, but nothing ever too serious. I had no idea about code blues. I had no idea about any sort of lingo or language around that. The neuro ICU, we walk into this room and this man had just had a stroke. And of course, I'm asking him different questions. What's your name? Who are you? Can I pray with you? And he's not responding at all, right? He had just had a stroke. He couldn't speak. And I got so flustered and so nervous because I'm like, conversation is supposed to be between two people, right? And he wasn't responding. And thankfully, the other chaplain there with me, she took over. And she finished the conversation for me. But I was so nervous, I was so flustered, and I went back to the chapel later that evening, and I was like, Lord, why did you assign me here? Why did you assign me to come to a hospital where I know nothing about? The other guy I was with, Gregory, who's now a priest in Bismarck Diocese, he had a respiratory therapist degree. So he knew, he had worked in hospital, he'd done his rounds or residency, whatever it's called for nurses, right? He had done all that, he knew the language. Lord, why did you assign me here? I don't know what to do. I don't know what to say. And what if this happens? What if that happens? How am I supposed to respond? And as I'm complaining and relaying this to Jesus, just very clearly in that moment, he just said, Sean, stop talking. Stop talking, right? And very clearly, I just heard the Lord say, I will be with you. I will be with you. You don't have to have fear. You don't have to have anxiety. I'll give you the words when you need them. Be at peace. Have a calmness, have a tranquility. Where there's disorder maybe in your heart, I will bring a new order. Be at peace. It wound up being one of the most transformative experiences of my life. Those would be different stories, but all I have to say, Jesus wants to bring peace, a newness, a harmony, a tranquility, a calmness in the city of man, there's a lot of anxiety, there's a lot of fears, there's a lot of things going on, and Jesus wants to say, don't worry about those things, come and have peace. Peace be with you. Not just an absence of chaos, of war, but Jesus wants to fill you with something. Fill you with his peace. Fill you with order. If we're honest with ourselves, sometimes we strive for the city of man, the things that are disordered. If we're honest with ourselves, right, St. Paul will say this, why do I do the things that I don't want to do? And don't do the things that I love. Concupiscence. Why am I attracted towards disorder? Why am I inclined to sin at times, inclined to do what is wrong? Jesus wants to heal that within us, heal the concupiscence, and bring order within us. Philosophically, we talk about this as that the higher faculties of our soul might govern over the lower faculties of our soul. Where do you find chaos in your life? Where do you find division? Where do you find a lack of peace, disharmony, anxiety, fears? Jesus appears in your midst today and says, peace be with you. The first message of the resurrection is one of peace. Last point for today. Our first reading talks about this, and our gospel talks about this as well. Jesus, when he tells about the Old Testament, when he tells about the scriptures, when he prophesies, he interprets the Old Testament, and specifically, was it not necessary that the Christ should suffer? Thus it is written that the Christ should suffer and on the third day rise from the dead. Suffering is not antithetical to peace. We often think that. If I had peace in my life, I'd have no suffering. Suffering is the healing remedy, the antidote towards maybe anxieties and fears, but that doesn't mean we won't suffer. It was necessary that the Christ would have to suffer. Peace, when God gives you peace today, it's not a removal of suffering, but rather in our hearts, it's an acceptance to say, Lord, I surrender to you, I trust. I trust that this suffering that I'm going through, this hardship, will actually bring about a greater good in my life. Don't run away from sufferings. Surrender, just as Mary does, to say, Lord, let it be done to me. Today, Jesus brings peace. Where in your heart do you find chaos, division, fears, anxieties? Allow Jesus to come and speak to you today. He comes in our midst and he says, peace be with you.